Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining in the call. We have about 50 people now on the call to discuss our third quarter numbers. Sort of learning over the first year, and I'll make a quick comment. I'll try to be fairly brief in terms of going through the presentation, minimize reading to you the things that you've already seen, but commenting upfront on some of the important number changes and explanations. I think that's fairly significant. I expect to be through that in about 35 minutes, and then we should have sufficient time for Q&A, hopefully not just Q, but also some A. Now, before I get into that, I wanted to just memorize. I've been a CFO now for 1 year, and I wanted to thank you for your support, and particularly to my team here. Without them, I would not have been able to do that. And Helmut, by the way, is also still around helping out, so thanks a lot. And now let's get into the substance. Overall messages for the quarter. I think unexpectedly so, when you look from the beginning of the year, this is the third good quarter for Allianz, and we hope also for our investors. We've seen double-digit growth to 24.5 billion on the revenue side. The operating profit with 2.1 billion is strong. Net income stands at 1.3 billion, a little lower relative to prior because of increased tax expense. We'll talk about that, but still a good number and a solid capital position, which we probably discuss in detail today. When you look at page four, the quarterly results overview, I'd like to remind you that, at least personally, I don't tend to look at quarter over quarter, but how the year accumulates. So let's just reflect for a second on the first 9 months of this year. We've accumulated 80.5 billion in revenues. That's a strong 8.6 billion higher than last year. We have accumulated operating profit exceeding 6.1 billion. That's 1 billion over prior year, more than 20% up. And net income is at 4 billion already. That's 800 million higher. So again, 20% increase over the prior year. And that is in a very, very tough economic environment with depressed interest rates, higher net cat loads. So from a management perspective, we are for the first 9 months significantly happier than some of us would have expected the year to develop. So that just as an intro statement, looking at 9 months number, not just quarter over quarter, and we'll talk quite some time about what are the effects in the quarter, but I'd like to keep the year into perspective. That also means that for the year overall, if we continue to have benign trading and benign trading environment, that is no new net cat loadings, for example, or exacerbated capital market volatility, we should come out at the upper end of our target range of 7.2 billion in operating profit plus or minus 500. So that's just an intro statement. So we are positive on the outlook for the year. Now that's supported by a number of facts. Let's move to capital position, page number five. Here's the development of shareholder equity. Some people apparently have commented during the day, why is the growth in the equity position not stronger than the 2.5 that you see here? Now, you have had in the shareholder equity increase a couple of points positively, net income going up and unrealized gains going up. Well, at the same time, we suffered from negative FX effect, and that's, I think, what was not in some of the valuation spreadsheets. The negative FX effect relative to the end of June was 1.4 billion euros, and that has impacted the growth of the shareholder equity. Now, when you look at the solvency ratio relative to the middle of the year, it's down 2 percentage points, and some of the effects that I just described do also affect the solvency ratio, plus two others, which I'm going to mention. The first one is we have an increase in shareholder equity driven by higher unrealized gains in AFS bonds, which are not included in available funds for solvency purposes. The second point, as usual, we do accrue 40% of net income for solvency purposes. We deduct that. And by the way, the 40% now are 500 million for the respective time period. And in line with the equity development, we have had FX movements decreasing available funds by 1.2 billion. And then we had some capital requirements due to the very strong business growth that we see in particular in life. So it's a natural development given these factors. Page number six gives you the usual equity shocks that we have on the IFRS and to the conglomerate solvency ratio. I think they're self-explanatory, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. let's move on to the group numbers and to revenue growth. On page number eight, you see the usual split up between total growth, i.e., nominal, and internal growth, excluding, in particular, foreign exchange, which had a major influence on the year-over-year comparison. The group overall is 6.5% up on the internal perspective. P&C looks 1.1% down. Now, let me comment and pause here. Significant part of that is due to a loss in volume on our agri business in the United States, accounting for around $97 million. Without that, the portfolio would about be flat. It accounts to almost 1% of that number. The strong growth in life and health continues at 11.7% on an internal growth basis, and asset management powers ahead with plus 29%. It's truly outstanding. Now, page number nine, I will not explain the numbers, but basically tell you what you see on this page from an economic standpoint is that we do have quite some volatility in the segments year-over-year. Given the economic environment, that should not come as a surprise. The drivers are somewhere similar on the interest rate side. Sometimes they're very different, but the overall picture is a very positive one because in our portfolio, we apparently diversify the effects between the segments and overall deliver better performance at this point in time. So I think that's very interesting to look at, and that same picture you would see if you would take the 9 months numbers. We'll talk about the various components going forward. Let me just comment on the corporate and other segment. The loss here decreased to $270 million. We are on plan. If you can be on plan with a negative number for the corporate segment, then we really have to improve. I think we did a couple of things well relative to prior year. The first thing is, after long deliberations, we have installed an improved foreign exchange hedge that improved the segments not just by $30 million this quarter, but has really helped us in the year to take the volatility out in the corporate segment. And we also have the banking segment here. Their revenues and the interest results increased by $13 million. So also there an improved situation. Not much more you need to say about the corporate segment. So let's please move to non-operating items. On page 10, there's just two lines that I would like to talk about as an intro. The first one is realized gains and losses. Here you see higher realized gains on the debt security side. Two comments here. They basically follow duration lengthening that we've done in some parts of the portfolio, and some gains that we realized relative to the size of the portfolio is very small numbers. We don't want to generate gains to offset sort of operating profit issues. So this is just a part of normal portfolio rebalancing, and that number for the third quarter of last year was artificially low. Now, so now in my mind, on a like-for-like basis, that number is about $40 million, $50 million maximum higher than the usually quarter would look like. So nothing in my mind to worry about. All the other components are fairly flat and stable. The one thing we need to explain is other non-operating here, and there are two major items driving that. One is the fair value impact out of the valuation of our Hartford warrants. In the third quarter of this year, we had a negative development of $29 million. The share price went up at the Hartford, by the way, even more now, but the volatility went down. That drives down the value of the warrants. Versus in the third quarter of 2009, we had $92 million of positive development. So the delta is a stark $121 million relative to prior. So that's the one effect. The other one is amortization of intangible assets and goodwill, particularly on private equity investments that we've taken down in this quarter. So those two together explain the vast majority of the swing, and I think that's the most important thing to recognize. The usual explanation of balance of unrealized gains and losses you find on the right-hand side, most of that explained by market movements, so I wouldn't want to spend too much time on this issue. Page 11, you see development, usual development of net income. There's various definition of what net income is as a service to you. Now, the only one line that people have missed, I think, is, and they couldn't really predict that, is higher income taxes. What is driving that? Normally, as you say, we expect a tax rate at around 30. Now, that is the year number, and that can fluctuate quite a bit between the quarters. It doesn't do that normally and hasn't done it the last few quarters, but this time it has hit out. Our effective tax rate is 34.3%. There was some tax, less tax-exempt income than in the prior year, and we have valuation differences quarter over quarter. What I can tell you, however, and that's more important, for the year we expect to be within our target range of around 30%, and I think that is really important to bear in mind for valuation and forecasting purposes. So that is it on the group level. I'd like to move on to P&C now. Revenue stand at 10.6 billion, operating profit up 9% at 1.1 billion, combined ratio at 97.1, driven by higher net cat on the one hand side, and on the other side, on the other hand, driven by runoff at 3.4%, and we'll probably talk about that as well. Page 14 shows you the usual split and the development of the countries. Let me remind you, the column on the far right-hand side is adjusted for FX effects, so it doesn't match the numbers in the three preceding columns. And you see a number of effects, as in the past, in markets where we do see pricing pressure or the effects of pricing pressure, we do continue to be very tough on underwriting standards. So we have still portfolio decreases. Germany is one. Switzerland now is another one. France and Italy. On the overall portfolio, now also on Spain, where the markets and trading conditions have deteriorated. While on the other hand, we have areas like South America, the UK, credit insurance, and Australia, where we're going very strongly. One explanation again to the United States. This here, the crop volume reduction that is due to changing prices in terms in the crop business in the US with minus 97 million play a predominant role in effect the overall portfolio. I think the only additional comments I wanted to make is that what you don't see here, because we don't separately show it, we have see very strong growth in the direct business. We are growing double digit here. For example, just our Italian business is growing 21% in the first 9 months, and the total group direct business is growing 17%. So that's good news, I think. And we'll also need to think about and talk about the price effect relative to the volume effect. We still have negative volume effects, partially driven by continuing cleaning, particularly in commercial lines, offset by positive price effects. The total price effect on the year already in the book that we can sort of statistically verify is at least 1.5%. So that's the volume effect. Now we move on to profitability. Profitability has improved. You see the drivers, underwriting, investments, both up on the investment side, largely driven by higher assets under management in the segment. You see a little bit, see that later. Now, you wonder, why does the combined ratio not improve if underwriting profit improves? That is a technical explanation. We have a significant part of the accident business in Germany in the P&C segment, and those changes in underwriting profit do not make it into the calculation of the combined ratio, as we have not done that in the past on a like-for-like basis. So that explains the difference. Now, if you move on to page 16, you see the various developments in the countries. Now, a couple of points. Germany hugely affected this year by NetCat. Let me give you a couple of numbers. Germany deteriorated 3.4%, which you can easily gather. What were the drivers here? Higher losses from NetCat and weather-related events were amounting already to 5.8%. It's huge. We also had higher large claims relative to prior year, another 1.1%, offset by less negative runoff, 1.6%, and the balance being lower attritional frequency by and large. So that is a big driver. The other main number to be explained is Eastern Europe. You probably asked about that. That's 14% up, 14.6 to be precise. A couple of effects. One is Hungary. We had the introduction of a financial tax. Thank you very much. 3.7% hitting our combined ratio. In Russia, we settled a large claim, and including a write-down and a provision on cost as a receivable against a one particular reinsurer that drove up the combined ratio 4.8 percentage points. And then we had additional losses to be settled out of the floods in the second quarter, driving it up another 7 points. So there's huge impact with the poor colleagues in Eastern Europe, and we are bearing with them. On the other markets, I think we have seen some very positive developments. In particular, obviously, we need to note this big swing in credit insurance, a highly volatile segment in both directions. Used to be very negative in 2009 and has turned positive now, where we are running off and have to run off the reserves that we were building in the financial crisis. Let's move on to the underlying drivers of the accident year loss ratio. I think there are a couple of interesting developments here to be noted. On the upper left-hand side, you see that for the first time in the nine-quarter development, we have the accident year loss ratio, excluding net cat, trending below 70%. We've been talking about that the last few quarters. I always said it's too early to call it a trend. It looks like the positive trend is indeed stabilizing. The second effect you have on the right-hand side is, for the first time in a long time, we have a positive price effect that we can actually dissect on the sub-portfolio on the accident year loss ratio of 1.1%, so lower than the 1.5 that I mentioned to you earlier, because we have a different cutoff, and that's significantly outbalancing the continuous claims inflation we have. Now, the nominal claims inflation, obviously, over a year is 3%. That should be, on a quarterly basis, obviously a much higher number than you see. So a number of the effects, particularly around portfolio cleaning, are really showing an effect here. Now, credit insurance, the improvements we continue to show as long as it's as volatile as it is, offset by the significant negative net cat effect. And you see that on the lower right-hand side. Over the last 2 years, the relative quarters had 1.5% net cat loading. We have recorded, again, a quarter of very high net cat, that is 3%. And despite that, the overall accident year loss ratio did not go up. Leaves you the runoff position, and you can believe that I'm spending a lot of time to understand whether the runoff we see here is natural, and I can only confirm to you that indeed is. Now, out of the 3.4% you see, 90 basis points alone is credit insurance. Yeah, so excluding credit, you have a much lower number, and that is basically supported by runoff out of portfolios that seen very high increases in claims reserves in the economic crisis. So in effect, what you see is that counterbalance to increasing claims reserves during the crisis, and that's why it's normal to see this runoff. So at this point, the underlying runoff for the portfolio at the moment is more around 3% and above the long-term average of 2%. At a very normal rate. Now, I will not go into the various businesses that we have, but I'd like to turn your attention on the expense development as usual. That's on page 18. We have, on the commission side, increases basically based on, nominally based on FX and growth in various markets. The ratio is stable. Unfortunately, it's not stable on admin and other expenses. And the key driver are twofold beyond FX. It's one-offs that we have that are not so nice, particularly in Russia. We've talked about that in the U.S. In the last year, we had a positive one-off on settling a health benefits plan. And this year, we have had 17 million extra charges in Switzerland, so that drive those numbers up. Now, unfortunately, we also have recurring items that will not go away. In the P&C segment, we have 35 million increasing expenses on the BILMOC, it's on pensions. And we have 20 million as expenses for this financial tax, and they are here to stay. Now, the good news on the BILMOC charges, that they go away at the group level, is something that only affects the P&C level, but group overall is neutral. I'm not happy with the admin expenses, because you should expect these one-off charges, even in a financial crisis. And as always, there needs to be more focus on getting admin and other acquisition expenses down and not up. Now, operating investment income, the other major driver of our performance on page 19, is basically up 6% to 841. Nothing special to be reported upon, basically driven by high investment base. As you can see on page 20, the average asset base is up 5.9% to 95 billion, roughly. The current yields are down, reflecting interest rate declines and stabilizing at the current level. The equity yield is due to some one-offs. They will not be repeated. stem from associated enterprises where we have realized gains on PE and real estate participations. Last slide in P&C, something that you always look at, page 21, is the pricing trends. Here we have seen very consistent development relative to prior quarters. Some markets, the nominal tariff increases actually been higher than anticipated in the middle of the year. I think there were some comments that where people didn't understand that. I've just added two comments on credit insurance in our large corporate business on the right-hand side. The credit insurance will have price increases yet plus 5% this year again. And AGCS, that's the offsetting factor, our large commercial business, sees very soft trading environment. And given the very large risks around, so we're very cautious on underwriting and are prepared to let top line go because the price trend for the year is slightly negative and we expect soft market conditions to continue. The various effects, despite some of the headlines we've seen, large losses have actually been not high enough in order to take sufficient capital out of the market. Particularly in the U.S., we continue to have enough excess capital that is chasing business, and we don't want to participate in that war for volume. So these are my introductory comments on P&C. Let's move on to the life and health business. And as a starter, a little apology, particularly for those of you that have to change your valuation models on the U.S. business. We have restated our AZ Life numbers, and I'll talk about that a little more in detail. And I've personally pushed this because what we are doing now much better reflects the true economics and the management levers of our business. The volatility that we've seen in the economic crisis on our U.S. business is totally overstated. The volatility in the underlying business. Yeah, and I wanted to solve this, and thanks to our team that was able to get it done. So revenues in the segment are 16% up to 12.6 billion, very strong numbers. Operating profit up at 655 million. Operating asset base up by 4.2 billion to 418 billion. The value of new business at 147 million at a new business margin of 1.6% according to our current internal valuation methodologies. Now, if we look at the revenue side, page 24, just two comments. Number one, we are growing both product segments where, as appropriate, where we make the margin, we sell the traditional product, but we're also growing strong investment-oriented products. So we hope to have the right balance between traditional and unit-linked products. Still, we see strong demand for guaranteed business as the key differentiator for people that are sick and tired to see their equity mutual funds go down all the time. Now, the German life business is still growing, and in this environment, there is flight to quality here. We are benefiting from the very strong ratings in the market, as have been a number of markets. Now, let me explain Italy. Italy had a bonanza in the third quarter of last year. We are within plan in Italy and still see strong contribution from bancassurance, even though at a somewhat lower level. And we also see very, very strong growth in Asia-Pacific, particularly in markets where we do have good margins. Where we're also growing is Japan. We are watching margins very carefully there. On the overall value chain, the margins are also positive. Now, the United States looks very large in terms of its year-on-year growth. Let me remind you that last year in the second quarter, we culled our VA product that we successfully reintroduced at very nice margins. And the growth at very nice margins is strong this year, so that number looks larger relative to prior than it is. We are right above or at plan in 2010. We also have strong sales in fixed index annuity, a product that is, in terms of its growth, in line with expectations. Now let's move to profitability, page number 25. The key change over prior year, we've told you last quarter already that the third quarter numbers will not repeat themselves. They were very much driven by positive exceptional impacts last year out of credit spread narrowing in the U.S. That was 130 million and positive fair value option movements from equity market gains. There were another 66 million. So that by and large explains the large swing. Then we have some changes in the expense results, mainly due to one-offs. In particular, we had a DAC adjustment to be done in Eastern Europe, accounting for 24 million. That was the biggest one-off item. Overall, with 655, we are just in the middle of the lower and the higher range we have provided for the year. We typically have told you have 2.3 to 2.8 billion. 2.8 would be 700 million to 2.3 would be at around 600 million per quarter. So we are exactly on target with the third quarter numbers. Now we get to the accounting changes that always cause a lot of fun. Page 26 gives you a description of what the original challenge was and how we have been addressing that. If you go back particularly to 2008, you saw a lot of volatility in our earnings driven by credit spread changes on the asset side. We have had a portfolio recently of 5.2 billion US dollars in fair value assets that with the spread tightening and widening constantly went up and down. And on the other hand, we had about 7.4 billion US dollars in fair value liabilities that, however, even though they were called fair value, were not discounted with the appropriate rates, but with market risk-free rates. Yeah, and that amplified volatility to a high degree. And it did not reflect particularly liability accounting, the management levers that we have available to share credit spread and credit risk changes with the policyholders. Yeah, and that's a misstatement of true economics, which is very important, and that's why we wanted to change it. So I have nothing against accounting volatility. I have something against accounting volatility that is not reflecting true economics. So what have we done? We have sold the assets held at fair value and reinvested them in assets available for sale. Somebody would say, well, you could have done that earlier, that it would have only taken down some of the volatility. So it's in of itself, we were waiting for the right opportunity to deal with the regulators also on the liability side, and we introduced successfully now a new accounting policy for the fixed index annuity liabilities. How does this work? The first thing, again, is all assets backing the fixed index annuity are now held and available for sale, and the remaining value liabilities are discounted at an earned rate that reflects exactly our levers that we have on the management side. So no more unjustified accounting volatility stemming from credit spread and interest rate movements, and I wish, to be honest, that some of the other accounting methods that we would have would also reflect our economics as good as we probably have it now with FIA. On page 27, you see the numbers. Some people have asked, so what would have been the third quarter number? I don't know what it is because we changed the accounting effective July. Yeah, so I cannot tell you what the third quarter number would have been. Just to explain, the sale of the fair value assets not reflected in the restatement, the cost of selling them was about 2 to 3 basis points of the assets, so nothing dramatic to be reported here. So the life restatement here reflects the restatement of the liabilities, which will be a lot more in line with economics going forward. So that is what I wanted to say. Maybe one additional comment on, despite all of the volatility, I wanted to remind you, we're not speculating on the asset side. The average rating in the portfolio that we have at AZ Life is a strong double A minus. Yeah, so this is not around camouflaging credit quality issues, to the opposite. All right, now operating investment income, page 28, up 80 basis points to 4.1 billion, nothing really noteworthy to report. Interest and similar income slightly up with assets up, net harvesting stable, and investment expenses also stable, so nothing to be reported. Net flows are still positive, and market effects, however, are sort of outbalanced negatively by foreign exchange effects, which were a large 8.3 billion on a comparison basis to the middle of the year. So the declining US dollar has affected us significantly. Just the AZ Life liabilities and assets have been contributing with 7 billion here. Yeah, so the swing given the dollar decline has been significant. The total asset base excluding unit linked is on page 30. You see the development and the current yields on the equity side, I just want to comment, are below normal because of the goodwill write-off and developments on the private equity side. That number is usually a little higher and will be higher going forward. Let's move on to the value of new business as we compute them today. This is the continues to be the pure theory, i.e. MCV old methodology as of end year, so you can do the comparison, and given obviously that interest rates are down very significantly, It's no wonder that the new business margin has declined, and the present value of new business premium is also slightly affected by that. So the value of new business stands at 147, which I think, given this environment, is a very strong number. We have not applied any liquidity premium to that yet. However, we'll talk about that later, I guess. At the end of the year, we will revisit our MCV and valuation methodology as we get closer to understanding what the new Solvency II environment is, and as we've learned through the crisis with what valuation methodology actually reflects economics and what is pure theory. Now, page 32 gives you the split up by region, and again, we are happy to report that in all regions, we are having positive margins. Now, again, in Europe, we're seeing, because of the strong influence of the guarantees, a declining new business margin with 2.1% still good. Asia Pacific actually improved because we're selling a lot of business on the unit-linked side without guarantees that have very attractive margins, and the U.S. stands at 50 basis points. Here, the FIA product in October has trended downward with a sudden drop in interest rates, and we are repricing it effective November in order to capture better margins. So we are here on the right track as well. So these are at least my initial messages on life. I expect some more discussion later. Asset management, let's sort of finish the top-down description with the best numbers that we have. Total assets now exceeding 1.4 trillion, third-part assets exceeding 1.1 trillion, and again we had exceptional net inflows. In the first quarter, I said we will probably not see again a quarter with 37 billion net inflows. I was wrong. We have now 40 billion. We reached a new high, and operating profit therefore continues to reach record levels, and the cost income ratio is truly outstanding at 58.5%. Now, the pages 35 and 36 give you both the AUMs and the flows, and page 37 gives you the net and fee and commission income. Here, I just would like to comment that we're not just growing, but the quality of the earnings is also improving, excluding performance fees. To look at performance fees. What do I mean? The third-party AUM margin has increased by 10% to 40 basis points. It's really, really strong. It hovered around 36, but higher share of retail and new products has driven up the margin, so the earnings quality, not just the volume, is up. Now, on page 38, you see the various drivers of the improved operating profit. On the operating expenses, profit participation, that's well earned, but also investment in new platform that's influencing the number. That in fee and commission income is up, however, by the same amount that the operating profit was in 309. Yeah, so it's basically doubled before cost effects. Fixed income is the key driver, as you can easily tell by looking at page 39. Here, all the net flows come in 32.9% higher AUM. Performance is 91%. I think most asset managers on the phone would be happy to have that. And operating profit is 400 million, very strong numbers. Equities, equity people always look at negatively. I think that's overdone because we are faring relatively well. If I look at the overall market, operating profit for the quarter is 30 million. We should get to 100 million for the year, I hope. And cost income ratio is also now improving despite a lot of restructuring. So I hope we also see better investment performance, and then we should continue to improve. Now, last comment on asset management and in the presentation before we summarize is something that goes, in my mind, unnoticed and not reflected in the valuation properly. And that is the fact that asset management is not just significantly increasing operating profit contribution, but the flow to net income is growing very, very strongly, because we've been buying out the B shares, in hindsight, at very good prices. This quarter alone, the contribution of asset management to group net income is 22%. 22%, and over the three quarters, already 16%. And the net income contribution has almost doubled. And I think that's very good for us and very good for our shareholders. So let me summarize. Double-digit revenue growth, strong operating profit, net income at 1.3 for the quarter. On the nine-month number, we are very, very comfortable on net income. Capital position still solid. So we expect on our outlook that we will reach the upper end of our outlook if there is no undue volatility in the remainder of this quarter. So Allianz shareholders should have a very good year 2010. Thank you very much, and I'm ready to answer your questions.